they may actually have touched the technology long before they even had a conversation with the advisor.
We like to use this term, show me you know me. Don't ask me for my information multiple times.
Technology allows you to prove that you know the client better.
We are using technology to transcribe recorded calls and then have a computer or a bot listen to that call to identify sentiment analysis and opportunities for additional next best offer, cross-sell, or escalation based on the sentiment of the call.
Hello, and welcome to BISA Industry Trend Watch Podcast. Good to have you with us today. Industry Trend Watch is a monthly series with industry leaders discussing trends in the financial institutions channel. Productivity trending is provided by our bankchannelresearch.com portal, an interactive tool that reports on channel performance based on data collected monthly from over 50 financial institutions. In addition to industry trends, you will hear our guests provide their perspectives on the evolving strategic initiatives that are driving success and enabling our channel to better compete in the broader financial services industry. But first, we'd like to thank Ameriprise for making these podcasts possible. And as a show of appreciation, let's please listen to this brief message.
This is Chris Melton, National Director of the Ameriprise Financial Institutions Group. Ameriprise Financial Institution Group is a proud sponsor of the BISA Monthly Industry Trending Podcast Series. With more than 25 years of experience and knowledge in serving the investment program needs of local banks and credit unions, Ameriprise Financial Institution Group brings a depth of understanding as well as investment capabilities to help clients and members feel more confident, connected, and in control of their financial life. We look forward to learning more about your financial institution and sharing how a successful investment program can be a competitive advantage. Call us at 800-679-1237 or visit us at ameriprise.com/AFIG. Securities offered by Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, member FINRA and SIPC. Not federally insured, no financial institution guarantee, may lose value. Thank you.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of BISA Industry Trend Watch titled Leveraging Technology to Gather Assets. I am Scott Stathis. I will be your host, along with Bob Mattel, who will introduce himself in a moment. So in this episode, we will discuss leveraging technology to enhance the client experience, to optimize the client discovery process, and essentially strike what I'll call a digital wealth balance between high tech and high touch. So let me pass it over to Bob so he can introduce himself and our panelists. So, Bob.
Oh, thanks a lot, Scott. And hello, everyone. I am Bob Mattel, and let me welcome you to this Leveraging Technology podcast, another in the Ameriprise-sponsored BISA Industry Trend Watch podcast. As Scott said, we have another great panel with us today. But before we meet them, let me remind you to visit BISANet.org for all things BISA. And hey, wasn't that a great conference? And it wasn't it great to be back at the Diplomat? I'm just so pleased that we're back there. So let me pass the microphone over to Jonathan Allen so he can introduce himself as a board member also of the BISA.
Hi, everybody. Jonathan Allen. I serve as a senior vice president for Westcom Credit Union. We're a $6 billion credit union based out of Pasadena, California. And one of the responsibilities that I have with the credit union is overseeing our wealth management program. So I'm a longtime wealth management professional and have the pleasure of leading a good team of advisors through our program manager, Dave Jebzinski. We have 19 financial advisors. We have a very robust platform program with about 22 platform employees. We call them member services representatives, and some of them are registered with Series 6s and Series 7s. Assets under administration is just under $1.5 billion. We generate a little less than $10 billion a year in revenue. The program continues to grow.
And we also thank you for being a third timer.
Thanks, Bob.
All right, let's switch gears and meet Scott Wilkins.
Thanks for having me on. So let me introduce myself. I work for Ameriprise. I'm the vice president in our advisor business development group. So think that is the organization at Ameriprise that is responsible for our coaching and also our learning and development, if you will. I lead a team of people. I lead a big part of our coaching organization, and exclusively I lead all of the coaches in our institutional channel. In addition to that, I'm responsible for some of our technology platforms, not the big tech backstage stuff, but just kind of the program leadership, if you will, bringing some of those capabilities to advisors. So psyched to join today.
Well, and thank you for being a first timer. And we always have to thank Ameriprise for being a longtime sponsor. We've done this since 2020. Our first podcast, I believe, was in June of 2020, and we've been rolling ever since. The pandemic had put us into like, what do we do now? And we invented podcasts for the channel and still remain the top and leading supporter of podcasts for our industry. With that said, let me pass it on to Scott, who's going to start with our first question.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think we are the only podcast producer for our channel,
which is a proud distinction. Yeah, I was being very modest there. That is correct.
I will be less modest. And this is our 36th episode, if I recall correctly. And I should mention to all of our listeners that on our website, there is a podcast directory where you can search on anybody's name in the industry and see if they've been on a podcast. We've interviewed, I don't know, 120, 130 executives from the industry. So it's a rich database of people, some interesting discussions. All right, first question, and we'll start with the big picture and then we'll start drilling down. So, you know, this episode is about leveraging technology to gather assets. And that is the game that we're in, right? Gathering as many assets as possible. And the best way to gather assets in my mind is to understand client needs. And the more you understand of your client needs, the better job you're going to do servicing those needs, and you will gather more assets if you do that. So how do we leverage technology to understand client needs and engender trust? Jonathan, you want to kick us off?
Yeah, I thought about this question a little bit, Scott. And one of the things I can't help but to think back 4 years ago about this time is we were all dealing with a global pandemic. And what it did is it really, in my mind, it's hard to believe it's been 4 years, but it was a pretty frightening time. And what it did is it really accelerated the level of technology engagement we have with our members and prospects. And so I think that back at that time and say, would we be where we are today if it weren't for a global pandemic and allowing not only our institution, but our partner broker dealer to pivot to a certain extent to enable a lot of the technology that we use today and to a certain extent take for granted. And I have a notepad in front of me, and that's the way we historically would prospect and or work with prospects in terms of documenting not only what their needs are, but where their assets were and gather some information about their concerns and their goals and their objectives. And to a certain extent, that became the framework of documenting and memorializing these conversations with a prospect or with a customer. And then we would typically then type those notes into some system, whether that be a financial planning document or some type of an application or maybe even a CRM. And then from there, that would lead to perhaps some other integration, although largely clunky. What I think happened during sort of the onset of the pandemic is we enabled a lot of digital technology, allowing us to better communicate with our clients, whether that be through pushing out documents for financial planning fulfillment, whether it be engaging them through things like access to mobile application. We wanted to show them how they could access their investment portfolios or our additional capabilities. We use a system called Unio, which is available through CUSA Financial Services. And then the member-facing application is called Clear One. So through that technology, we push out access to the client's investment holdings. They may have been waiting for their paper-based statements in the past, and we had a high adoption of the Clear One technology. So more of our customers today have digital access to their portfolio. And I think in many ways, being able to see my investment portfolio, see the historical returns, be able to pull down documents demonstrates transparency and in turn engenders that trust. So I think that it's a process that we've gone through and it's not over. It continues to evolve. But I think a lot of that was accelerated when we had to pivot away from a face-to-face interaction with a prospect or a customer to engaging them digitally, even as basic as things like Zoom calls. So.
clients and advisors got more comfortable with technology through the pandemic. The big question in my mind is what's next? And what I mean by that, and maybe it's less what's next and more of how do you differentiate yourself? I think that's a better way to think of it, right? Because now everybody is using the basic technologies that were widely used during the pandemic. There is a lot of account access type stuff out there now that's engaging with the customers. But if you're a financial services firm, you don't want to be me too, right? You want to be, because nobody notices normal. So the big question in my mind for our channel is, how do you differentiate yourself by going that next step? It's beyond what everybody else is doing because they got comfortable technology in the pandemic. What do you do from there? How do you really engage the client? So, and then, you know, we'll dive deeper into that, but just I'll throw that out there and Scott, pass it to you for your thoughts in that regard. And you might not have been ready for that question, but it was something that just dawned on me. So go for it.
Yeah. So let me, I had a couple different comments, but let me start with Jonathan. I think you really highlighted it really well, which is the front door to the financial services experience 5 or 6 years ago for most people was a live meeting or a phone call. And I think the front door has totally changed, right? And so kind of someone's initial experience, engagement with an organization is often involves technology to a large extent. And so I do think that's been a really big shift. I mean, I was just literally planning a vacation last night and I was making reservations at Airbnb. And right, you know, I didn't talk to a human being. I sort of went there I wouldn't even consider booking a vacation rental if someone did not have a really phenomenal technology front door, right? So I think that world has changed quite a bit. And I think the importance of that kind of that experience, and in reality, people may experience, you know, kind of being introduced to an organization, an advisor, they may actually have touched the technology long before they even had a conversation with the advisor. We know that. We can see that you know, clients, prospects, they're checking us out online. They're looking at our websites. They're getting a sense of our professionalism, our modernization. And they're just, you know, frankly, it's an expectation. In some ways, it's not optional, kind of like Scott, like you were inferring. If you don't even have really good stuff, you're not even in the show. But I a different angle, I think that's kind of interesting. And I'll just say it this way is, you know, what I've noticed at our organization, and this is true in the institutional channel in particular, you know, teams have gotten bigger, institutions have gotten bigger, the pace of, you know, meeting with clients has gotten faster. And so I'll just stated, obviously, like technology allows you to kind of know your client, like prove that you know the client better, right? When you have kind of that stuff at your fingertips, it just allows you to kind of, you know, more capably describe, you know, kind of that you're really in touch with that client. And you know, and I've seen advisors try to adapt, you know, the yellow pad strategy into the modern world. And when you have 1,000 clients or 5,000 clients or 10,000 clients, it gets really, really hard to do that. So I think the size and the scale of our programs and of our advisor team sizes really necessitates, you know, kind of having at your fingertips lots of information about clients. And I think technology just is, you know, enables that to some extent.
No, I agree. Well, so let's dive deeper into this, because I think the overarching theme here is, I mean, gathering assets, obviously, but engendering trust, right? Because the more you trust somebody, the more likely it is that you're going to give them your assets to manage, right? And I think technology can help with engendering trust and really understanding, capturing needs and servicing those needs. So Bob, let me pass it to you, and we'll maybe dive into some of the tools specifically.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think there are a lot of tools out there. And I think you both brought some good points about digging in deeper and really understanding what makes a customer tick, what makes a customer choose a bank. That front end process is probably much better at an Airbnb than it is at most banks, for sure. It's not the most engaging way to meet a bank is online. But let's dive into CRM and financial planning software. What can our channel do to optimize these tools? And, you know, I'd be also interested to add a second layer into that about protection. So keep that in mind as well, because I think that's an area that we haven't really leveraged. We have the ability to. So So Scott, you know, what can our channel do to optimize CRM, financial planning? I'm sure just about everybody in the world uses, you know, one of the two options out there. You know, what are your thoughts about, you know, engaging that software to really dig in deep into a client's needs?
Yeah. Well, I thought what I'd first start with is just sort of acknowledging, you know, what's really interesting when you're talking technology. You know, lots of people are asking questions about artificial intelligence and machine learning. And, you know, there's lots of questions in our industry about these technologies. And you know, I'll just say it like this. You know, artificial intelligence only works if you have data. And, you know, and what I'd say is, you know, really good artificial intelligence only works if you have a lot of data. So in other words, the magic is really having tremendous data that you can then mine, and then that provides insight. And so, and I just bring that up because there's this core layer of technology that is sort of like required to enter the game for that other stuff. And CRM and financial planning data would be that core layer of technology in my mind, right? And so I bring that up because, you know, I think that sometimes as a program manager or as a VP coach that I, in my world, or, you know, sometimes you forget that you've got to have CRM at scale, and you've got to have financial planning at scale really well done in order to then be positioned to kind of take advantage of some of these emerging technologies. So I just think that's an important thing to say because, and this is true at the advisor level as well as at a program level or institution level, right? And so it's really critical that advisors understand and programs understand that baseline of data is if you don't do that, you can never do any of the other things, right? And if you don't do that soon, you're going to be so far behind, it's going to be really hard to catch up. I know that sounds a little preachy there, but I just think it's really important to remind everybody that that's that foundational level of data that that I think is ultra critical. And like you said, you know, CRM is kind of like the hub of an advisor's life. I think Scott said that. And really optimizing that, really getting everything you can out of that tool is ultra critical. And then, of course, lays that groundwork. So maybe, Jonathan, I'll let you just comment and maybe have a few other thoughts on the backside.
Yeah, this is a really good observation. And I think one of the things that we struggle with, and I can't help but to think that other executives of smaller financial institutions like credit unions or even smaller regional banks, community banks, we didn't have CRM solutions 10 years ago, and a lot of that work is in development. In fact, we are continuing as we built a CRM solution for the financial institution. How does that communicate with our broker-dealer ecosystem? And that's a challenge I think that a lot of institutions are facing today. We like to use this term, show me, you know me, right? Which is simply, don't ask me for my information multiple times, depending on what part of the organization I may be communicating with. So when I call into your contact center, you should know that I have a loan application on file and that I've had some challenges with that. Or if I'm in the branch, you should see that I have a wealth management relationship. And those are really critical elements that are foundational and very baseline for most financial institutions. But show me, know me means how is my financial advisor who I trust and they, for the most part, have all my money, are they getting a view into my credit relationships and my depository relationships or perhaps insurance relationships? And so that's the part that we're wrestling with a little bit, too, is for the advisors, they typically live within the broker-dealer ecosystem, if you will, that has its own technology stack. And some of that integrates with the financial planning tools or the advisory agreements and pre-populates applications, but it may not be communicating back with the financial institution's CRM. And we call it MRM within the credit union world, member relationship management. Even the referral system, which sounds very basic, but we have an internal referral system at Westcom where our branch partners are referring prospects to the wealth management arm, but that doesn't pre-populate a prospect record. And how do we measure up that record with an ultimate customer? So there are fewer and fewer bank-owned broker-dealers out there, and it's probably easier for them because they have an integrated system, having owned their own BD. But for those of us that have a reliance upon firms like yours, Scott, and Meriprise, we are looking for technology integration. And I think that's a critical component here too.
Yeah. And could I just jump in? I just want to amplify something you said. I love the word when you were describing how I said the word prove, right? Demonstrate that you really know a client. And, you know, sometimes we use the word delegated memory, right? Our CRM is our delegated memory, right? And this is alludes to like the bigger teams where you have different team members, maybe outreaching to different clients for different things, right? So it's really not just one advisor necessarily. A CRM system allows an organization, a team to communicate with a client. And that's a very different scenario than maybe what the business looked like 10 years, 15, 20 years ago, right? And you know, I've had a lot of advisors say to me, like, well, I know everything about my client. Yeah. But maybe your staff doesn't, or your new hire doesn't, or, you know, the program manager doesn't, or et cetera. And so I just wanted to sort of amplify what you said, because I think it's really, really critical to demonstrate that across the the whole entire organization that is serving that client, not just one person, if you will.
Great, great commentary, both of you. I think it also opens up another question that's not on our scheduled questions, but, you know, always drives me crazy, where we look at these organizations, we look at banks, and 5% of a bank's overall deposit customers have a relationship on the financial services side. No one's really pushing that number further up. You know, and, you know, technology should be able to do that based on what you were just saying. If it works within the ecosystem of a financial services investment program, wealth management, whatever, why does it not work for a bank where the bank has 95% of the customers don't have a relationship with you, Scott? 95% of the customers don't have a relationship with you at Westcom. You know, how do we bridge that gap? How do we dig deeper into that and figure out the secret sauce to get 5 to 10%? I'll let you think about that for a second. Jonathan, I mean, really, do you see anything, you know, out there in your realm of CRM or anything building upon that in the credit union?
Yeah, Scott touched on some of the call emergent technologies, and I think we're all really referring to things like ChatGPT and AI, which is certainly everything we hear about all the time. And we've taken some early steps. We have, you know, I think of Westcom as being a very technology forward credit union. Our roots are in telecom. And so not only at the board level do we have a lot of folks with strong technology backgrounds, but even our executive leadership are very technology forward in our thinking. And so it's built into our DNA. And I think we challenge ourselves to be the best and think a bit more forward about technology integration. And a couple of the things that, you know, we recently implemented that I think are starting to lead to additional use cases and opportunity to further demonstrate enhanced MRM capabilities are things like enterprise texting. We also have leveraged some ChatGPT and also AI through our contact centers. This is I'll get very granular with you on this one, because I think I don't know that it's game changing for us, but we're learning a lot. We are using technology to transcribe recorded calls that go into our contact center. And then, of course, within our organization, we have a couple of contact centers, whether that be wealth management, property casualty, or let's call it the branches contact center, which really is the primary number where a lot of customers come in. Just transcribing these calls and then being able to review, have a computer or a bot listen to that call to identify sentiment analysis and opportunities for additional next best offer, cross sell, or escalation based on the sentiment of the call. I mean, it's really, I feel, is extremely compelling when a call may have went into a contact center. And it may have been very simple, like, could you just give me the last 5 checks that have cleared, or what's my balance? But those calls sometimes evolve. And now we're able to extract information that was contained within that discussion that may present opportunities to follow up with that customer for another line of business within the organization. So, I mean, it's just one small example of how we're using leading edge technology to better understand our members' needs and to anticipate what they may be looking for. And so really, really pleased with some of the early results. And by the way, all that gets documented within the MRM system. And then the ability through enterprise texting, two-way texting, to communicate directly with that member who didn't walk into a branch.
Phenomenal. I mean, we can't teach the customer phone rep to do that, but we can teach the technology to do that. Scott, anything like that going on in your world?
Well, lots of stuff like that, but let me just respond to your question. You know, I think Jonathan highlighted it earlier. So can we bring kind of that client experience? Can we bring that to life? So I think a big challenge for a lot of the institutional space is, can we create this really compelling experience? And I think historically, the wealth management space hasn't always done that. There's been a sort of a distinct space between a member experience and then this wealth management experience. And I think, weaving them together more seamlessly is going to be really critical and allow them to sort of unlock, if you will, that, you know, a greater member leveraging of those services. And listen, we have a long way to go, I think, in the industry in general to make that easier to do. But I think it's like little things like, you know, if a client has to go to three different places to go to see stuff, that's friction that gets in the way of kind of making it easy for someone to move over there. So I know that that's a place where, you know, I'm spending a lot of my time, we're spending a lot of our time on the firm, is like, how do we make it easier in that space? And then how do we also really sort of elevate that member experience in the wealth space so that it, you know, it's very attractive for more members?
That makes a good point. Let me just one quick final point on this question. It's on the financial planning side, because we really did talk at a much higher level. If we bring it down to the FA level and get a little bit more granular, financial planning software, obviously, that each of you use helps you do that discovery process we were talking about earlier. You know, if that's done right, there's a lot of stuff there. And I always jump on the, there's that particular number. What's the likelihood that your plan is going to get to 100% or 99%? And focusing on that number should gather more assets, because people want that number to be as high as possible, right? So, I mean, any thoughts with engaging the software, which is technology, to get more assets? And I just heard from Scott, so Jonathan, why don't you, you know, just touch on that for just a minute?
Yeah, it seems like everybody is racing to a score-based system. I mean, you've seen this on the manufacturing side with a lot of our insurance companies, but also the technology to sort of coincide back to probability Monte Carlo simulations to say there's an 83% chance that I'm going to meet my target date of retirement and fulfill my income and requirements. So we are using several companies to help us, Riskalyze being one of them, to help really evaluate and provide that, let's call it, probability score. And it's really a comfort. When I log in and it says I'm still on track, it's a feel good kind of a thing. And you know, we all probably experience this even with our own financial institution through our 401k. You know, Fidelity is a big provider in this space as well. And of course, they do the same thing. So I think the more we engage our members and draw them, you know, the sort of the interdependency upon our institution and our wealth management capabilities, this is one way to do that, right? And I know that's kind of what you kicked it off with, Scott, around engendering trust. Well, one way you do that is connectivity. How many times do I touch them? How many times can I demonstrate that they're logging in, they're looking at this number? And it just allows the financial advisor to further engage that member, knowing that they're engaged and looking. One of the things I think about, like, how many times did we realize that some of our customers were not opening their mail to read their performance reports on their advisory account? Now, on one hand, you say, well, I'm glad they're not paying attention to it every single day. On the other hand, I need them to pay attention to it because, you know, we're pushing out these numbers to them and I've got to engage them in this discussion. So I think the customers are getting, you know, whether that's through training that's being conducted by the financial advisor or just a general improved awareness around technology capabilities, customers are demanding more. They want to be able to put their finger on where their investments are held and the performance of that. And it's not about opening up a quarterly statement or an annual performance report. So I think that's a big part of it as well.
Scott, is there something with this scorecarding of financial planning that makes the customer feel good and also makes the financial advisor more hungry to get that number up to a higher number by finding assets elsewhere?
Yeah. So there's no question that the highest probability of a financial plan being successful is when the financial advisor is paying attention and the client's paying attention to some extent, right? You know, and I think that there's a lot of evidence. And one of the things that Ameriprise has been a leader in financial planning for a long time, you know, 40, 50, 60 years. And, you know, a consequence of having a really robust, you know, financial plan backstage, you know, we used to call it like the Wizard of Oz, right? Give me your all information. I kind of go behind the scenes and like do a bunch of work. And I come back and say, here's the solution. And you know, and that works, of course, but there's something better about having it front stage, right? Where clients get to collaborate and interface with the information. And, you know, and I think a big part of our journey has been, how do we make financial planning and financial planning software easier, right? You know, and the way I like to phrase it, it's like goal, reality, and gap, right? Here's where I want to go. Here's where I am. Here's the difference. And I think the scoreboarding, if you will, is a simple way to do it, right? But it allows people to sort of participate and sort of engage in a simple way. And, you know, what's interesting, Bob, you highlighted this. We know, we have data, we have information, anecdote, that when the number's wrong because things are missing, clients get engaged. In fact, interestingly, clients are more interested in sort of engaging when the number's wrong than when it's right, right? They're like, you don't have this or you don't have that. And there's almost in a weird way, like, you know, almost like a psychology around kind of like pulling them in and engaging them to some extent. So I do think it's a really good way to sort of force the client to kind of, you know, be involved in that decision. And again, there's no question that over time, if the client's engaged and the advisor's engaged, the probability of having a successful financial future is just higher. So the visualization of that and the gamification of that is absolutely helping in that regard.
I agree. And I'm going to turn it on to the other Scott to continue this conversation.
Yeah, there's no doubt when client can mess with their plan online in a collaborative way, that probability score is the main motivator to put more assets into the plan, right? It just sucks assets out of the woodwork because the client, the mentality is, I can do better than that. Let me put this in there. Let me put that. And then they start tweaking it themselves and they're off and running. So, you know, boomers are a little less likely to do that than the generations after the boomers because they're really comfortable doing that stuff online. But that's critical for us because those generations after the boomers are the ones where all the wealth is going. And we want to get them engaged today because tomorrow they're going to be our wealthiest clients. So I had a number of observations through that last segment there as you guys were talking. One is that the one thing that I would caution our listeners on is relying on financial planning software for discovery. It's not a great discovery tool from this one perspective, and that is that discovery and financial planning software focuses just on assets. Assets are not discovery at all. Discovery is understanding someone's life, right? And understanding the things in that person's life that motivate their financial decisions. That's where discovery has to start. And financial planning software will never allow you to do that. So you need to do that on your own, or at least build that into your CRM system with customized fields or whatever. So going back to what I said about engendering trust, I mean, think about who are the people that you trust the most? Obviously, your family, but then friends, right? Your ultimate objective with your clients, if you're an advisor, is to become their friend to a significant degree. But if you have, whatever it is, 350 clients, it's pretty hard to be friends to all of them unless you're leveraging something. And in this case, that something has to be technology and CRM. Why? Well, what's friendship about, right? It's about understanding, compassion, shared experiences, et cetera. So just a simple example, you know, if you're a good advisor, one of the things you might want to do with your good clients is keep track of the things that matter in their life. If they have a sick parent, right, you want to ask every once in a while, you know, how's your mom doing? or if they have the kid that's challenged through, for one reason or another, or that's doing well in sports or applying to certain colleges, you want to ask, you want to ask about their lives so they know that you care and that you're listening. But there's no way you can do that with hundreds of clients unless you're doing a really good job tracking that stuff in your CRM system and getting prompted to ask those types of follow-up questions. So, Jonathan, back to your statement, show me that you know me. That's a huge part of it, I think, right? And I love that phrase, show me that you know me, because that, that can be deep, and that can change the paradigm on how you work with your members, right? Because if you take that to heart, there's a ton there. All right, so let me ask a question with all that as a kind of a background, and that is, to me, one of the best ways to engender trust is to do an incredibly good job with discovery, and discovery is ongoing. People's lives change, right? So the questions that you asked a year ago may get different answers this year if you ask the same questions again. So how do we use technology to optimize the discovery process? Jonathan, I'll hand it off to you.
Yeah, it's a tough one because for the most part, we don't do a good job with this. We are starting to learn from, I'll tell you one area I think is starting to produce some additional results around where clients hold their money is, a lot of that is just internal analytics. Right, connectivity that our customers have through increased debit card, auto payments, where their money, if we're their PFI, and we're also still trying to figure that out, right? Because sometimes people don't traditionally keep all their money with one institution. We all know that. There could be as many as 5 or 6 or 7, whether that be advisors or FIs. And so we're constantly learning from the activities going on within our set of members and sharing that information with our advisors around the levels of engagement that these customers have. And that could be everything from an auto payment to Robinhood or to Coinbase or a payment that's going to a credit card company. I mean, there's interesting things that we're learning through some enhanced analytics that we're doing. And from that, sort of building out use cases to say, how do we take this information to learn more, one, about the next generation, the inherited wealth? I think a lot of financial institutions, I think of our customer base as somewhat being the institution. Bob, you alluded to this 5% penetration. It doesn't seem to be changing a whole lot. We pay attention to that number, but it's hard to move the needle. Well, it's hard to move the needle because you've got like this barbell of customers. One, we've got a lot of this younger generation that's coming into the institution that doesn't act anything like how we built the book of business, which is typically older, wealthier clients. And so we need to learn the best way to interact with them. We need to learn what their behaviors are. And so the only way we're doing that is through this deeper discovery that's going on based on the behaviors that we're observing through the financial institution. So I don't have the answer around how we've leveraged that, but we are learning more. Scott, I can't help but to think about when you said, some of our clients become our best friends or friends. And when I think about, my friendships, if I haven't talked to one of my longtime friends in quite a while, the conversation might be, although we haven't talked in a while, it feels like we just talked yesterday, right? And we have those relationships which you could pick back up with a long time because we've earned that right over multiple decades. But with newer relationships, which are ever changing and is still part of that discovery with our clients, we have to stay on top of that, right? Because we don't have the benefit of a 20 or 30 year relationship with some of these newer customers. And so I think that's the bigger challenge is how do we engage them quickly and have a process for ongoing communication with them. And then I think the last point I would make is you just can't have 500 clients. You just can't have 1,000 clients. And we're seeing a move of financial advisors that are acknowledging that themselves and saying, I got to move to the second story. This isn't working for me anymore. I really need to take my business to another level. And the only way I'm going to do that is to really take care of these 100 or 200 relationships. And I got to give up these 300, 500 more and move upstairs. And fortunately, we're not having to beat them over the head anymore. They're doing that on their own. They're raising their hand and they're saying, I'm willing to give up these relationships to take my business to another level. And so that's helping us also increase distribution.
We can boil this down to a simple stat, and that's wallet share, right? The advisors that have 700 clients in their books, they don't have majority wallet share with any of them, literally, right? The ones that have 100 clients, 200 clients, 250 in their books, good percentage, they have majority wallet share. So much better way to do business, right? Much better way to do business because you have better relationships, trust-based relationships with those clients. That's why you're dealing with the majority of their assets. And you're not on a treadmill, right? Trying to manage 750 clients and not having majority wallet share with any of them. So you're an afterthought with every single one of them because the majority of their assets are elsewhere. The bottom line, it's where all advisors have to go to, because if you're not going there, you're going to be replaced by technology, literally, right? Because you're a commodity. Quick point, and then Scott, I'll let you have a go at that question about optimizing discovery, leveraging technology. We've talked about penetration rates, 4-5%, et cetera. There's a credit union that the program manager has mentioned this to me a couple times. He said, we did an ACH study. He said, in our credit union, we have 4,000 clients in our investment services organization. In our wealth management organization, as they call it, right? 4,000. We did an ACH study. We have 20,000 clients that are using apps like Robinhood and Acorns and SoFi, a 5x multiple. So they have 5x more penetration than we have. What are we doing wrong? And that points to, because the next question that we're going to throw out at you guys is, you know, what's the optimized blended solution between high tech and high touch, right? Digital wealth has to be part of our offerings, but it speaks to that. So we're going to have to get better at that, right? The other piece of engendering trust, I think, and I'll throw this out there, is leveraging technology to make sure that you're also imparting financial wellness on your clients, on your members, right? So the education that you as an advisor have to provide for financial wellness among your clients is ongoing. It's bits and pieces here and there. So you're guiding them and you're helping them be a better, you know, at being better at managing their finances. So I think technology can contribute to that as well. Enough said, Scott. Let me pass it to you for some thoughts on all that.
I think let me just go back to the optimize the discovery process, and I'll just hit it from a slightly different angle. So first of all, I think that acknowledging that the discovery process starts not at the beginning of a WebEx or a Zoom or a Teams call necessarily, right? It's the client begins to learn about your organization. And so I think just acknowledging that there could be a level of dialogue and communication with them that's happening over time before we actually come in the front door. And that sort of sets the stage. And then of course, you know, and this is just kind of an interesting way to think about it, when we have the capability, when you actually put a prospect in CRM, we actually know a whole bunch of information about that prospect. We're able to actually get a bunch of information externally and from anything that they engage with us on in that sort of that warm-up phase. So we're able to, you know, and I think we'll all be able to do this to a greater extent. We'll be able to know a lot about that person before they actually come in the door if we've done our homework. So, you know, we often know a significant more about a prospect today than we did 5 or 6 years ago, because we see all this behavior. We purchase data from external sources. We see the things that they engaged in through maybe marketing campaigns or things that they looked at on our website. And because we're capturing all that, we can serve it up to an advisor so that the quality of the questions that they ask right out of the gate are really targeted about that person. So that's probably not what you were asking when you were thinking about this, but it's just an application of that technology to some extent. I'll just finish. So the last part about it is, I do think there's something magic. I remember when I was an advisor, you know, 30 years ago, one of the little strategies I used to have is I had a calculator with big buttons. And I would sometimes push it over to the client and say, okay, I would just make them do some very basic math, right? To just sort of bring to life, if they saved a certain amount of money, here's how much it would grow to. And I think that, you know, in today's world, it's not a big calculator with big buttons, but it's just sort of like, it's giving them permission to kind of collaborate and dialogue about choices that they make, right? So it moves the discussion from what rate of return you're going to get me to, here are the different behaviors that I can exhibit that will help me improve my situation. So technology, I think, can play a really big role in giving someone the confidence that you can really help them to some degree. So those are my comments.
All makes sense. All right, Bob, I kind of inferred another question that's what I'll call digital wealth or that blended experience orientation. So let me pass it to you to dig into that.
Oh, and that is me to a T, because yeah, this whole digital wealth talks about clients that ultimately want this blended experience. Yeah, I got my financial planner out there. I actually have two of them, but I have this other account that I like to play with, because don't we all like to play and take some risk? That's outside of my likelihood of my plan. So nobody knows what's in this little fun bucket I have here. And how, going down the path of financial planning, you know, how would we handle that? You know, how do you position yourself and your firm with those clients that, you know, they want to follow their financial plan, but they also want to have some involvement in that? I think part of Money Guide Pro actually does that with the blocks and things of that nature, get you to play. But what about those that want to go beyond that, so to speak? Scott, take a crack at that one.
You know, well, let me say it this way. I think that what people want and expect is that everything's in one place and kind of easy to get access to, right? So that's not exactly what you're asking me, but I think that people's expectations that they can have everything organized in one place, their tolerance for going to 15 different places, even if they have money at many different places, I think is diminishing. So I think it's becoming more important to, you know, create space where people can sort of do everything. And I think, you know, as I look at my life and more affluent clients' lives, I think that, you know, simplicity is critical. I think the firms and the broker dealers, the institutions that can sort of set up that situation best have a really good chance of winning, because, you know, we know because we talk to clients, and you know, clients want it convenient and they want it easy. They will pay for that, and they will resist making changes if it's easy, right? So it makes it really sticky as well. So I do think that you gotta think about it from that perspective: is how do we make this simple and easy? How do we have one destination point? And then, you know, how do we just acknowledge that there are some clients that want to do nothing, right? They want to meet once a year, and they want a straightforward meeting. And there are a lot of clients. You know, I was just having a conversation with a friend yesterday, and you know, I'm in the financial services world. I think about my own financial situation on a fairly regular basis, but it's almost always at 10 o'clock at night or on weekends. It's not like at 2 o'clock on a Tuesday, right? And so when I'm accessing my information, it's typically, you know, at night or on a weekend. And I want to be able to do some things when I want to do them, not when I know someone's at their desk and they can take a call. And the truth is, I'll just give you an example. If I'm going to move $1,000 from one account to another account, I don't want to call my advisor to kind of have a long, elaborate conversation about $1,000. You know what I mean? Like, there's just elements of that self-service that I actually prefer to just do on my own. And I really would resist a situation where somebody required me to make a phone call or to talk to a human being in a lot of those situations. So it may not be I'm playing with my money, but it may just mean there's just a level of self-service that I'm accustomed to working with Amazon and all these other tech companies. And I'm just expecting that same thing in my financial services relationships.
It'd be wonderful if our banks became the financial aggregators of everything that we do. Will that happen? I'm not sure. So Jonathan, I know I'm going to try to speed it up here because we're running way, way long on this. You know, from a trading union perspective, you have members that might want to have the option of doing some stuff on their own and also being part of the wealth management opportunity at Westcom.
Scott touched on it. I think the key is to not really fight that inertia that some customers are just going to want to do things on their own. And Scott gave great examples of, you know, whether it be Amazon or whether it be VRBO or any other online service provider that's going to meet one or more of my lifestyle needs. Part of it is the ability. I don't need it, somebody to co-browse with me. I just need to be able to move this money, and I could do it efficiently if I just do it myself. Or I have this account over here where I want to implement some of the ideas that I have on my own. And it's quite okay. I think to your point, as an institution, you'd love to be the aggregator of that. But I think we've all learned that some of those aggregation tools are not well adopted. A lot of firms have provided those, and there doesn't seem to be the consumer adoption to giving one institution access to all my other accounts through technology like Plaid, for instance. So, you know, we just want to make sure that we have the most compelling solution, and whether that's a digital advice platform or a self-directed brokerage option, whatever that may be, we would love for you to do that business. We understand and appreciate that there's a component of this that you want to self-direct. We just want you to do it within our organization. You got to earn the right to do that, though, too, right? Pricing's got to be appropriate. The technology, the solution, the interface, and all that needs to be compelling enough as well. So,
and one quick comment I'll make on that is that if you think of online banking apps, for example, have come a long way. As a matter of fact, my online banking app is easier to use than my bank's website. And so I'll go to that first before I go to the website. And I think that's the case with a lot of other apps, Scott, that you refer to. What's my point? My point is that I think we as financial service institutions have to get really good at providing good apps for messing with your investments too. Because right now we're better web-based than we are app-based, but we have to catch up app-based, right? Because that's the way it's going. So that's a part of it. And you know, didn't mean to interrupt you, Bob, because I know you had another thought there too. I just wanted to put that out there. We do have to get better with our app-based, our mobile-based extensions of that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, imagine if Plaid was something that was adopted and it was in, you know, institutions, and that really, you know, was the place that our banks went to. It was Westcom's Plaid, you know, or Ameriprise Plaid. I mean, that would be just a powerful tool. It's almost like, you know, swiping your wrist when you're at the grocery store and not having to pull out the card. So anyway, we've been spending a lot of time talking about customers and how technology affects customers. Let's switch gears and look at the other side of the coin and financial advisors, and give Scott an opportunity to ask the second to last question, because we also have a lightning round after this.
Yeah, and this one, let's just go at this one quickly, just with your experiences when you look across your advisor population. And you know, Jonathan, you can do it from advisors at Westcon. Scott, you can do it from the advisors that you work with. But one of the things that has been a challenge in the past, and maybe still a challenge to, I hope, a lesser degree, is user adoption of some of these technologies. So you can look across all the technology that you've deployed to advisors, and there's an 80-20 rule. There always is, right? 20% of that technology is going to give you 80% of the pop, right? And that's what you really want advisors to use. Any aha moments, success stories, whatever, with being able to increase user adoption for those key pieces of technology that you want to see more usage of? Jonathan, you want to start us?
I think, well, at a prior institution, it was very much a stick, and how we got advisors to use the technology. And the stick being all compliance-related documentation occurs within CRM, right? So not only are you pushing the workflow through the CRM, but you're also the accountability back to rationales and solving for paperwork deficiencies was all done through the overall workstation, I'll call it, right? So that if you migrate people away from paper-based applications to a technology system that says the only way you're going to be able to process business is through this technology system, whether that be a CRM or whether it be your broker dealer's advisor workstation. That's one way to do it, right? You force people through that system, and that's where all the documentation occurs. That's where all the books and records are. The flip side of it is that's where your commission report is. If you want to dig into how you're getting compensated, this technology is how we push that over. There's no longer these paper-based blotters that are going to be emailed out to you with your transactional history, your advisory fees, and your trails calculated against your comp report. It's all built into the technology. So I think that's an effective way, and very simple, but if you advisors, let's be honest, are very concerned about their compensation, push all the comp elements and all the reporting back through Let's call it the advisor workstation, and that you'll get the adoption up there rather quickly. Find out what things they're most interested in that help them manage their practice, and make sure that that's all enabled through the technology. And then, like I said, then the stick side is all the compliance, the documentation, and all the workflow has to also be integrated through that technology. That's been my experience.
Okay. Scott, thoughts?
I think, a bunch of years back with maybe a slightly slower pace change world, if we release a technology, advisors would say, hey, could you just slow that down a little bit? And we would, we'd slow it down. And I think the world's just changed, I think today, do you really want a broker dealer that's going to slow down? Or do you want a broker dealer that's going to speed up, acknowledging that there's a change curve there. And I think what we believe is that you need to be moving fast. Now, with that said, here's a couple of things that I think that we've seen really make a difference. So Jonathan alluded to one, which is build everything inside CRM, right? So you sort of build it in a way that sort of encourages the behavior. I think of it less like a punitive thing and more like that book Nudge, right? So that there's a book called Nudge and sort of How to Drive Behavior. An example would be is you put salad at the front of a buffet, not at the end of a buffet, and people just eat healthier, right? And so I think there is a design element, a user interface element that can have a major part in getting people to do that right thing. Part of it is one way of doing it, like Jonathan was inferring. And then there's also the design element that sort of just makes it easier to, put some salad on your plate first. And so I think that is important, building it into the machine, into CRM. So, at Ameriprise, we build everything into CRM. We're not going to stick it on some other thing over here. If we want people to do it, it's going in CRM. And so I think that's worked well for us. And I think the other thing that's worked really well for us is, and this is a big change that we made about 6-7 years ago. And that's why part of my job is coaching and part of my job is technology, is we pair every coaching that we do is paired with the technology. So in other words, they're so important today. Like, we believe so strongly that if you want to grow, you have to leverage this technology, that if you're working with our organization in some way, shape or form, it's going to be paired up with that kind of technology. So my teams have ownership of driving that result. We're not technology trainers. We don't get, we're not measured on that. But what we're doing is we're trying to really think about how we're implementing that broadly. So I think that's worked for us. And we're really thoughtful about that, is asking those questions before we're working with people so that we can get massive uptake.
I think that, the key, you just made me think of this, Scott, the key is not thinking of technology as a separate entity when you're doing advisor development or whatever. It's just a piece of it's a piece of the way you do business, right? So it's not, okay, we're going to train technology, we're going to train on discovery or whatever. It's one and the same. It's just what you use to do. It's the way you do business, period, right? So it's just expected. We also have mentioned aggregation a few times. My opinion is Plaid, et cetera, yeah, all well and good, but we have to be the aggregators, right? And how do you aggregate? Well, by getting more wallet share. How do you do that? By doing a good job with discovery, understanding client needs, asking the right questions, right? Trust is what aggregates, right? So that's our job. Yeah, technology can assist, but the trust is what's going to make all the difference in the world. So I think it's time for the lightning round question. Bob, what do you think?
I think we are getting that point. So let's do it. Scott, we'll start with Scott Wilkins. We'll start with you. If you could switch lives with any celebrity for a day, who would it be and what would you do?
So this is going to sound, I think, a little corny and silly, but so I'm going to choose a semi-celebrity, a guy named Rick Steves, right? The travel guy. Does he count as a celebrity, I think?
Sure.
I'm 55, so I'm spending a bit of time thinking about the next stage. And part of that next stage is doing a little travel. And so I think Rick Steves is just a very curious human being. And it just seems to have tremendous joy in his life. At sort of discovering new countries and traveling. So if I could spend a day in his life, I think that would sound really fun. I'd love to do that.
All right. We'll see if we can arrange that. Jonathan.
This one's easy, I think. I love Switzerland and I love tennis. And so I would choose the athlete celebrity Roger Federer. Although it would only be a day, I'd certainly like to enjoy what Roger Federer has and maybe live in his life for a day. And maybe I would be able to also, learn how to hit 135 mile an hour serve or whatever he's up to these days. But anyway, he's a businessman. He's philanthropic. He lives in one of my favorite countries. And I think Roger Federer would probably be the person I don't want to say trade places, right? This isn't trading places. I just get to live like Roger for a day.
BISA has a pretty good budget, so I think we might be able to figure these things out.
There you go.
Scott Stathis.
Okay. So as some of our listeners know, I'm in a rock band. So I'm going to answer the question from that perspective. And the question is two parts. So who would you be and what would you do? Well, so who would I be for a day? If you think back of like the era that I grew up in, I would be David Lee Roth for a day because that dude has so much fun, right? And I've seen him many times back in the day. Yeah, I would be him for a day. What would I do? I'm not going to answer that part of the question. How about you, Bob?
I'm going to answer this question without using a name. I would be any top line news anchor from any network and want to ask each of the two presidential candidates, WTF. Nobody wants either one of you old guys, and not let them back down until they gave me a name of who should run in their place.
That would be an interesting newscast.
Yeah.
That puts a bow on it. Yeah, thank you, Bob. All right, well, Jonathan and Scott, thank you both for being on this episode and for contributing your thoughts and your insights. Very much appreciated. We always enjoy these discussions. Bob, I bet you have some closing comments for us.
I do, and I have my top three takeaways, which unfortunately I have to add a fourth to because of how the chatter went at the tail end. I already had my three. Number one, probability of success scores matter. That is number one. Number two, use the tech. Don't be replaced by it. Number three, show me that you know me. Now, yeah. To get more on that, either hit replay or call Jonathan. The final one is Philip on the salad. You can never have too much salad. Thanks again to our panel. Really appreciate it, Jonathan and Scott. Thanks to Jeff Hartney and the BISA. Big thanks to Ameriprise for their continued sponsorship of this podcast series. And don't forget the other two podcast series, Untangling FinTech and Industry Leadership and Success. These can be found wherever you get your other podcasts and music. So now it's time to say goodbye, and we hope you enjoyed the conversation today. And also, if you have an idea for a podcast, please send it to either myself or Scott and or Jeff Hartney or anyone, and just maybe get to us and we'll do one on your topic. On that, say goodbye, Scott.
Goodbye, Scott.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of BISA Industry Trend Watch, and thanks to Ameriprise for their much appreciated support. Be sure to subscribe to our two other podcast series, Industry Leadership and Success, focused on industry leading performance and success stories, and Untangling FinTech, aimed at helping you keep up with the evolution of technology offerings in our industry. Goodbye until next month.